Now, the conditions we saw in Soweto were a breeding ground for infectious diseases, and things like HIV and TB are no exception. Now, this week, the United Nations reduced its estimates for how many people are actually infected and affected by HIV and AIDS, but they also announced that South Africa is officially the country with the world's highest prevalence, in other words, number of cases of that disease, anywhere. But there is one benefit to being the country with the most HIV and AIDS and also being relatively connected to the first world, and that is that the scientists and doctors working there have some of the best statistics on the disease that the world has to offer. And I met up with some of those scientists working to try and understand this condition and also try and break the back of this epidemic.
My name is Helen Rees. I'm the Executive Director of the Reproductive Health and HIV Research Unit at the University of Witwatersrand, based in Johannesburg. The scale of the HIV epidemic is something that hasn't been known in the world ever before. We can say that 5 million people out of the 41 million people in South Africa are infected. What that really means is that 1 in 8 of every adults in this country are infected by HIV. It means that when we see pregnant women in the clinics, between 1 in 3 and up to 1 in 2 of the women we see are infected with HIV, with a very high risk that they're going to transmit the virus to their infant. In young girls aged between 15 and 24, about 1 in 4 of those young women are infected with HIV. If this were the statistics that we saw in a developed country, a state of emergency would be declared.
If you look at who those people are, is there any particular group or subset in the population who are affected, or is this everybody?
HIV can affect everybody, and if you look in South Africa, indeed it affects all race groups, it affects rich and poor. However, if you look at the way that the epidemic is now spreading, it is disproportionately affecting black African South Africans, and we do think that it's affecting young people much more than older people.
Do you have any ideas as to why it's affecting the people that it's affecting? Is it an educational thing, or is there something else going on?
I think there's a lot of something else going on. There's a whole mixture of issues here. There is the issue of poverty that, as a background, affects all infectious diseases. There's a historical issue of apartheid that created the migrant labour system that's both destroyed the social structure of families, but has also pulled men from their families and made them single male individuals living in urban settings where they take often second partners. But there are other things as well. There are issues about other sexually transmitted infections and possibly just the sort of virus that we've got and possibly the receptivity of the population. So it could be right down to basic science as an influencing factor as well in why we have such a bad epidemic. If indeed there is some sort of scientific and basic biological explanation to this, then we need to understand that if we're going to stand a chance to make a vaccine.
Thank you, Helen. Now, Francois Venter, you work with Helen. What have we learned so far about how people actually pass this on and when they're most infectious and when, therefore, most of the transmissions occur?
I think what we have realized is that it's only in the first few months that people are hyperinfectious. There is still an infection rate after that, but the scale of the infectiousness is so much greater during those first few months that it's starting to explain some of the frustration as to why large-scale prevention programs in our country in particular, but throughout Southern Africa, have not had the impact that we've hoped they would. Condom provision, for instance, in this country is actually very, very good. Education processes have been, you know, in terms of if you measure it against people's understandings of HIVs and their dispelling of myths, people know what's going on. They understand about HIV. It hasn't changed the dynamics of the epidemic on the face of it.
So why are they still getting it then if they know all that?
I think that what we haven't understood is when transmission actually occurs, and it seems to be very concentrated in the first few months immediately after infection. And if you do not intervene in those first few months, you actually lose the overall public health benefit of dealing with transmission.
So what you're saying is if everyone stopped having sex for 3 months, which is when you're most infectious when you first catch it, then potentially you could just stop it in its tracks because people's infectivity falls so much after that period.
That's the theory. In fact, we could probably break the back of the entire epidemic if we could just alter sexual behaviours for a very brief period of time.
What about drugs? Because that's the thing at the moment. It's the mainstay of how we're trying to deal with HIV. There's no vaccine, so we've got to treat people that have got it rather than trying to prevent people getting it in the first place, because that's, as we've shown, part of the argument, but it's not the whole solution. So how do the drugs work, and have you got access to them here in South Africa?
The drugs are very, very effective. They essentially switch off the manufacture of the virus and allow for the body's immune system to regenerate. They are available in South Africa and have been freely, relatively freely, for the last three and a half years. Within the rest of Southern Africa, it varies from country to country, and even within our own country, from region to region, where in some rural areas people battle to get access to these drugs, while in urban areas, access is relatively free and available.
So we've heard about the drugs, we've heard about other behavioural education to try and cut this down, but Jocelyn Moyes, you're working on another way to try and deal with this problem.
So an area that we're doing quite a lot of work in is vaginal microbicides. The two present products that are about to come to the end of clinical trials block HIV from attaching to the body cells. They're a very large molecule which will sit on the HIV receptor of the cell and so form almost like put a key into the keyhole, and so that when HIV comes along, it can't get through the keyhole into the body cells. The present microbicides and testing come in a gel formulation which is applied vaginally to prevent HIV either attaching to the cells or replicating.
Just for women, or can men get some benefit from this?
Well, I mean, it's topically applied and controlled by a woman, but there is a chance that there will be protection for the male partner as well.
Have you any feel for how effective this is? Because, you know, it sounds like a lot to put your faith in, to be honest. How do you know that you're going to get complete coverage, or how do you know that you're going to get enough concentration to do away with the virus?
We've got two candidates in phase 3 testing, which is the efficacy testing. So does it work or doesn't it work? We'll have one set of results early in next year and the other results probably early in 2010. So then I think we will really have some sort of proof of concept. Can it work or can't it work? So at the moment, our basis is that these compounds are active against HIV in the lab. They've been active at preventing HIV infection in animal models, and they are safe to use in humans. So that's our assumption to this point. And our efficacy in humans will be proved early next year and then again in 2010.
And just returning to you briefly, Helen, a lot of people are probably thinking, why should the rest of the world really worry about what's happening in one other country? I mean, there's lots of other problems around the world. Why should HIV in South Africa be such a big international issue?
Well, you know, it's not just HIV in South Africa. HIV globally is not going away. In fact, in many countries, it's re-emerging as a problem. The other thing that we know is that with a disease that's as devastating as this, that's seeing life expectancy drop by 10-year aliquots, almost year on year, that's going to have a profound impact ultimately on the social fabric in many African countries and in other countries in the Far East that are affected. You must then think what that will do to economies of those countries, what that will do to political stability, and once again, we are a global family, and if we have instability and poverty and growing problems in one part of the world, inevitably they will relate to what happens in other parts of the world. That's one argument. The other basic argument is the argument that I hope we never lose touch of, is that we are one common human family, and we cannot ever look at the level of suffering that we're seeing as a result of this epidemic in this part of the world and just turn our back on it because it's not directly affecting us.
Pretty scary, aren't they, those statistics? One person in two who's pregnant turning up at antenatal clinics and they're HIV positive. South Africa, the country with the, as the UN puts it, the worst prevalence of HIV anywhere in the world at the moment. That was Helen Rees and Francois Ventner and Jocelyn Moyes. They're at the University of Witwatersrand in Johannesburg and they're working to try and break the back of this HIV epidemic that's currently gripping South Africa.
Laying the facts bare, the Naked Scientists.
It's The Naked Scientists with Chris, Dave and Ben. And this week we're looking at some of the science that we discovered during our week in Johannesburg last week, where we went to attend South Africa's first example of a communication of science conference, where in fact The Naked Scientists were a headline act. We ended up on national radio and television pretty much every day last week because people there are really eager to try and get hold of more science, and it's just something that they're not doing. We don't know how lucky I guess we are here in the UK to have the amount of amazing communication and journalism that just goes on. So it was very eye-opening for all of us concerned. Anyway, if you have any science questions for us, then you can send them in. Email us, chris@thenakedscientist.com.